I'm fine, he replies. I deserved it.
You deserve worse than that, I reply, although I can't quite manage the malice I want. It's hard while I'm mentally picturing 8, laughing, joking around with me and Marina.
I know, 5 responds. I didn't... I'm sorry, Ella.
I pick up something else from his mind. That's never happened before. Maybe my legacy is getting stronger. I don't think too much about it, because through my mind's eye, I'm seeing 8's body, left behind on purpose in an empty hangar. I try to make sense of the image, but 5's thoughts are a confused jumble. There are so many conflicting impulses in his brain, and I'm not a skilled enough telepath to make sense of them all. I've already walked past him, but after our telepathic conversation, I hazard a glance over my shoulder. 5 has managed to prop himself up. He works a metal ball bearing across his knuckles, over and under, waiting for his legacies to return. He looks right at me.
We have to get out of here, he thinks.
Chapter 17. Ashwood Estates is quiet just before sunrise, a light fog greeting the gray day. I could hardly sleep, which isn't exactly a new development. I sit next to the living room window in Adam's old house and take cell phone photographs of the documents Agent Walker turned over, sending them on to Sarah. We're going to leak them online via They Walk Among Us. Because, at least that way, we can ensure the information gets out there. Walker has a list of journalists and other media people who she believes to be trustworthy, but she's got a list the same length of reporters in the pocket of MoguePro. There's no surefire way to get this intel out there except on our own. It's going to be an uphill battle. In the years we've spent on the run, the Mogadorians have gotten too far ahead, become too entrenched in the military, government, and even the media. The smartest thing they ever did was chase us into hiding. According to Walker, it's going to take something big to turn the tide. She wants us to cut the head off of MoguePro, meaning take out the Secretary of Defense. I'm not sure how that's supposed to get us any support from humanity. Walker says we can carry out the assassination covertly. I haven't decided if we're going along with that part of the plan, but it's okay to let Walker think we're down with doing her dirty work. For now. More important than Sanderson, we're supposed to expose Cetricus Ra, using whatever human Moog photo op he's got planned for the United Nations, against him. The plan is to make a big enough scene that humanity will see the Moogs for what they really are and rally against the invasion. A population that's been duped for a decade will finally be out of the dark. Once the humans see aliens firsthand, we're hoping people will take a niche site like They Walk Among Us seriously. I just hope we figure out a way to pull all this off without dying. Dark thoughts still gnaw at me. Even if we manage to form a resistance bigger and stronger than the ragtag bunch we've assembled at Ashwood Estates, there's no guarantee we can turn back the Mogadorians. For as long as I've been on Earth, our war with the Mogadorians has been fought in the shadows. Now, we're about to involve millions of innocent people. It seems like all we're struggling for is to give humanity and us remaining Lorik the opportunity to fight a long and bloody war. I wonder if this is what the Elders had planned for us. Were we supposed to have already defeated the Moogs with humanity none the wiser? Or was their plan when they sent us to Earth just as desperate as ours is now? No wonder I can't sleep. Through the window, I watch a couple of FBI agents share a cigarette on the porch across the street. I guess I'm not the only one suffering from impending invasion insomnia. We let Walker's people camp out in the empty houses around Ashwood. They secured the perimeter, guards posted at the gate Adam and I wrecked earlier in the day, pretty much making this place the home base of the brand new human Lorik resistance. I still don't entirely trust Agent Walker or her people, but the looming war has forced me to take on a lot of strange allies. So far, they've panned out. If my luck with trusting old enemies doesn't hold, well, we're pretty much all doomed anyway. Desperate times call for desperate measures, and all that. The floorboards creak behind me, and I turn around to find Malcolm standing in the doorway leading up from the Mogadorian tunnels. His eyes are droopy with exhaustion, and he's in the process of stifling a yawn. "Morning," I say, closing up the folder of Walker's documents.
"Already?" Malcolm replies, shaking his head in disbelief. "I lost track of time down there. Sam and Adam were helping me earlier. I thought I just forced them to take a break a little while ago."
"That was hours ago," I reply. "Did you spend your entire night going through those Mogadorian recordings?" Malcolm nods his head mutely, and I realize that he's more than just overtired. He's got the punch-drunk look of a man who's just witnessed something shocking.
"What did you find?" I ask.
"Me," he answers after a moment's pause. "I found myself."
"What do you mean?"
"I think you better gather the others,"
is his only reply before he disappears back into the tunnels. Marina is asleep in one of the upstairs bedrooms, so I wake her up first. As she heads downstairs, she pauses in front of the master bedroom. Once upon a time, it was occupied by the general and Adam's mother. But now it's the temporary resting place for 8. Marina lays her hand gently on the doorframe as she passes. I noticed when I woke her that she's taken to wearing 8's pendant. I wish there was more time for me to grieve with her. Adam is asleep in the remaining upstairs bedroom, his sword propped against the side of the bed within arm's reach. I hesitate for only a moment before waking him too. He's one of us now. He proved that yesterday when he saved my life from the general. Whatever Malcolm's discovered on those Mogadorian recordings, Adam's insight could be invaluable. Sam and the rest of the guard slept elsewhere in Ashwood Estates, so I dispatched some Chimerae to track them down. 9 shows up after a few minutes, his long hair all unkempt and wild, looking about as fatigued as I feel.
"I slept on the roof,"
he explains when I shoot him a weird look. Why?
"Somebody had to keep an eye on those government dorks you've got camping out."
I shake my head and follow him down the steps into the tunnels. Malcolm and the others I've gotten hold of are already assembled in the Mogadorian archives. Silent and uneasy, Marina sitting about as far from Adam as possible.
"Sam and 6?
Malcolm asks me when I enter. I shrug my shoulders. The Chimerae are looking for them.
"I saw them go into one of the abandoned houses,"
9 says, a sly smile on his face. I give him a questioning look and he wiggles his eyebrows at me.
"End of the world, you know, Johnny."
I'm not sure exactly what 9 means until 6 and Sam come hustling through the door. 6 is all business, her hair pulled back, looking like she's cleaned up and gotten some good rest since her ordeal in the swamp. Sam, on the other hand, is flushed, his hair sticking up at odd angles, and his shirt is buttoned all wrong. Sam catches me studying him and turns a darker shade of red, giving me a sheepish smile. I shake my head in disbelief, fighting back a grin in spite of the dour mood. 9 whistles between his teeth, and a smile even flits briefly across Marina's face. All this only causes Sam to blush more, and for 6, to increase the defiant look she's skewering us with. Malcolm, of course, is oblivious to all this. He's focused instead on the computer, queuing up one of the Mogadorian videos.
"Good," We're all here, Malcolm says, glancing up from the keyboard. He looks around the room almost nervously. I feel like a failure having to show you this. Sam's post-hookup blush turns into a look of concern.
What do you mean, Dad?
Malcolm shakes his head. They tore this information out of me, and even now, having seen what I'm about to show you, I don't actually remember it. I let you all down.
Malcolm, come on, I say.
We've all made mistakes,
Marina says, and I notice her gaze drift towards Nine.
Done things we regret?
Malcolm nods. Regardless, late in the game as it is, I still hope this video will show another way forward.
Six tilts her head.
Another way? Instead of what?
Instead of total war, Malcolm answers. Watch.
Malcolm presses a button on the keyboard and the video screen on the wall comes to life. The faces of a gaunt, older Mogadorian appears. His narrow head fills most of the screen, but in the background, a room similar to this one is visible. The Mogadorian begins speaking in his harsh language, his tone sounding formal and academic, even though I can't understand him.
Am I supposed to be able to understand this creep?
Nine asks.
He's Dr. Lakram Anu,
Adams says, translating.
He created the memory machine that, well, you know, you chucked a piece of it at a helicopter last night, actually.
Oh, that! Nine says, grinning. That was fun!
Adam continues.
This is old. Taped during the machine's first trials. He's introducing a test subject. One he says was mentally tougher than the others he's worked on. He'll be demonstrating how his machine can be utilized for interrogation.
Adam trails off as Dr. Anu steps aside, revealing a younger Malcolm Good strapped into an insanely complicated metal chair. Malcolm is thin and pale, the muscles in his neck standing out, largely thanks to the awkward angle his head is forced to recline at. His wrists are buckled to the titanium arms of the chair. An IV cord runs into the back of his hand, nutrients arriving via a nearby bag. An assortment of electrodes are stuck to his face and chest, their cords attached to the circuit boards of Dr. Anu's machine. His eyes stare directly into the camera. But they're unfocused. And unblinking.
Dad, oh my God, Sam says quietly.
It's difficult to look at the Malcolm on screen, and it gets even worse when Anu starts asking him questions.
Good morning, Malcolm,
Anu says, now in English, his tone the kind usually reserved for children.
Are you ready to resume our conversation?
Yes, Doctor,
the Malcolm on screen answers, his mouth sagging through the words, a glimmer of drool appearing at the corner of his mouth.
Very good,
Anu replies, and glances down at a clipboard on his lap.
I want you to think about your encounter with Pittacus Law. I want to know what he was doing on Earth.
He was preparing for what is to come,
Malcolm replies, his voice distant and robotic.
Be specific, Malcolm,
Anu insists.
He was preparing for the Mogadorian invasion and the rebirth of Lorien.
On the screen, Malcolm looks suddenly alarmed. He jerks his arms against his bonds.
They're already here, hunting us.
Indeed, but you're safe now,
Anu says, and waits for Malcolm to calm down.
How long have the Lorik been visiting Earth?
Centuries. Pittacus hoped that humanity would be ready when the time came.
When the time came for what?
To fight. To restart Lorien.
Anu drums the clipboard with his pen, growing annoyed by Malcolm's hypnotized vagueness.
How will they restart Lorien from here, Malcolm? The planet is light years away. Are you lying to me?
Not lying, Malcolm mumbles. Lorien is not simply a planet. It is more than that. It can exist in any place where the people are worthy. Pittacus and the elders have already made the preparations. Lorelite runs beneath our feet even now, circulating through the earth, like blood coursing through veins. It only needs a heartbeat to give it purpose. All it needs is to be awoken.
Anu leans forward, suddenly very interested.
I find myself doing the same thing, bending towards the screen, my head tilted.
How will they accomplish this?
Anu asks, clearly trying to keep the excitement out of his voice.
Each of the guard possesses what Pittacus called Phoenix Stones, Malcolm replies. When the guard come of age, the stones can be used to recreate the features of Lorien, the plant life, Lorelite, the Chimerae.
But what of the legacies? What of Lorien's true gifts?
Those too will come once Lorien is awoken, Malcolm answers. The Phoenix Stones, the pendants, everything has a purpose. When they are committed to the earth in the Elder's Sanctuary, Lorien will live once again.
Anu glances back at the camera, his eyes wide. He composes himself and presses on.
Where is the sanctuary, Malcolm?
Kalakmul. Only the guard may enter.
Here, Malcolm pauses the recording. He looks around the room. His lips are squeezed into a somber line, but there's a hopeful glimmer in his eyes. Everyone's stunned faces peer back at him. None of us quite done digesting what we've just seen.
Nine raises his hand, frowning.
I don't get it. What the hell is Kalakmul?
It's an ancient Mayan city located in southeast Mexico.
Malcolm replies, a ripple of excitement stirring his voice.
Why didn't we know any of this? Six asks, still staring at the paused screen. Why didn't the elders tell us? Or our Sapans? If this is all so important, why keep us in the dark?
Malcolm pinches the bridge of his nose.
I don't have a good answer for that, Six. The Mogadorian invasion caught the elders off guard. You were rushed to Earth. Your Sapans completely unprepared as well. Your survival was top priority. I can only assume all this, the Phoenix Stones, your pendants, the sanctuary, was meant to be revealed when you came of age, once you had legacies and were ready to fight. To tell you before that would have made your secrets too vulnerable. Although,
Malcolm looks forlornly at his image on the screen.
We can see how poorly secrecy served us.
Maybe that's why Henri came to Paradise looking for you, Dad,
Sam suggests, glancing between his father and me.
Maybe it was time.
My mind is racing. Without even realizing it, I've started to pace back and forth. It takes a look from Six to get me to stop.
I always thought we'd win this war and return to Lorien,
I say slowly, trying to catch hold of my thoughts.
I thought that's what Henri meant about restarting it. Maybe he meant here, Six suggests. Maybe we're supposed to restart Lorien here.
What would that even mean? Sam asks.
What would happen to Earth?
Can't be worse than what'll happen when the Moogs get here,
Nine replies.
I mean, I remember Lorien being pretty sweet. We'd be doing Earth a favor.
On the tape you made it sound like an entity of some kind,
Marina says, looking at Malcolm. Malcolm shakes his head.
I wish I could remember more, Marina. I don't have the answers.
It could be like a god,
Marina says, a hushed reverence in her voice.
It could be like a weapon that comes busting out of the earth to kill all the Moogs,
Nine suggests. Adam clears his throat uncomfortably.
Whatever it is, Malcolm said we need